Doc, reel four.
What was the procedure for putting a balloon up into the air?
Yeah. First of all, was to depend on mechanic one, which was to ensure the earth was, which was a copper rod, was driven deeply into the ground to earth the winch, which of course in turn earthed the cable. That was his first most important job. The other one was to lay out the V with the pulley on it, the V wires as we called it, and the crew of the actual balloon who were holding the restive giant by ropes on the side, by guy ropes, would walk over away from its canvas bed towards the winch and connect up with the pulley wheel and the V wires ready for ascent. And then of course the thing was to raise the balloon rather sufficiently to finish roughly vertical above the drum, and the crew would have received the order, let go, and she would be floating in mid-air with the two artillery spotters already in the basket ready with their maps, map cases, etc., which were squared, by the way, for artillery spotting, and two parachutes on each side of the basket, one for each in case they were needed, and then you were ready to release, and on the handbrake, which controlled the drum brake as well. The foot brake controlled the brakes on the winch, but the handbrake also controlled the brake on the winch drum proper. So you were sitting there like an angler, watching this surging, and the first initial surge of power from a gas-filled balloon is considerable, whether it's loaded or not. It simply rushes up. And then you had to control this until it reached the required height, perhaps 1500, and it was so convenient they could ring down to you when they were high enough to see what they wanted, or perhaps not go so high. If they could see what they wanted at 800, you would remain at 800, or not, as the case may be. But the thing then was to watch all the time for any surges or any dangers, any approaching enemy aircraft. You had to be there all the time on duty whilst the crew could clean themselves up or do whatever they wanted to do. But you were on duty the whole time watching the action of the observers and the behaviour of the balloon, mainly the behaviour of the balloon, and especially for change of wind and all that. And when you received the message to pull down, descend, you had to be very careful when you pulled her down to about 100, 200 feet from the ground, and then she started to veer. Unless you were very careful, she would veer from port to starboard, nose pointing to the ground and back again, and the men in the basket were receiving a terrific bucketing with the risk of the basket striking the ground and breaking a limb or even worse. So you had to play them like a fish, like an angler playing a fighting fish. You had to play this balloon on the cable in the same manner. As she started to veer, you had to release quickly and give it a run. And then when it righted itself and the wind took control again in the right direction, you could gradually, safely and slowly pull it down. Or in case of emergency, you would put your foot down with full throttle and wrap it down quickly. All depends what the circumstances were. But there was a great art in the winch driver's skill in either raising or even lowering the balloon, and the observers would often have a look to see who was on the controls, and I used to feel that they were happy knowing I was on there. Could be imagination, but I never had any grumbles. So that was the great art of control of this massive object in the air. And with the Draken balloon, it's a rather odd-looking object. It's like an enormous phallic emblem with the ballonet underneath resembling the tests in men. And caused great fun below with the troops. Of course, they could see this huge thing hovering overhead. And the only thing was that if the wind was in the same direction, enemy Drakens and ours all face the same way, which of course they would do, but they didn't. They weren't opposed one to the other. They were all in unison. Didn't matter, but that caused great fun, especially with the parachutes on the end. But then, towards the last 3 or 4 months, Draken was condemned. I think for the simple reason it resembled the German ones too closely, and we were issued with a French Caco. I think I've got the name right. Caco balloon, somewhere there.
Yes,
the French Caco. And we remained with the Caco all during the war, which of course you saw in hundreds in the World War II. Same model, same everything. So we stuck to the Caco ever since there. But
how did the Draken keep nose to wind? You mentioned parachutes.
Yes, they were mainly for giving elevation and an angle of flight. One parachute with a fairly light breeze would bring the nose high up into the air, which was wanted. A certain angle of flight was clear for the men in the basket, and better, gave them a better ride. But if the wind increased or was very high, you'd have one. If it was very little, you'd even have four or five parachutes attached to the tail of the ballonet, so they drag, could pull the ballonet down with the basket underneath, and the nose of this phallic emblem high up in the air. And that was the reason for the parachute. But with the Caco, of course, there was no parachute. We didn't need them at all. It acted more as a perfect kite by inflating the ballonet at the bottom and the ballonets at the side. And you had that forward thrusting kite action, which was essential for steady observation. And the Caco was a much better balloon. In fact, so much better that in course of time the Germans imitated us. And you know what they say about imitation, highest form of flattery. They copied us. So in time they all became Caco type balloons.
How did they keep at the same altitude? Was there an automatic device?
No, we kept them at the same altitude by the cable. If they wanted to go higher, they rang down and told the driver, let up, or pull down, or descend, whatever you want. So you controlled the height. But you'd find that in case of a high wind, the balloon, true to its kite type, would dive forward into the wind. The higher the wind, the more the balloon would drive forward into the wind, which was the perfect kite action. It was only when the wind dropped to negligible that it began to sway around and behave a little bit improperly. But with a high wind, the higher it got, the more it drove forward into the direction of the wind. So you controlled the height from the driving seat, really. Release or whatever you want to, whatever message you receive from the observers up above, who could talk, of course, direct to the battery they were having this shoot with.
Did you have to bring or alter the altitude according to the time of day as the sun's rays cause the gas to expand, or?
Well, yes, but they had that was controlled mainly by a valve fitted in the nose, and the valve was by a very strong hemp cord attached to the centre of the balloon rigging inside, and it couldn't be expanded, and that was tied to the valve in a certain position that if the balloon heated and overexpanded, the balloon would expand, the balloon proper would expand, but the valve cord wouldn't. Therefore, the valve used to blow off because the balloon was expanding, but the cord wouldn't allow it to, which blew off the surplus gas until after a time it cooled down. And then, of course, the valve by the same cord would automatically clap shut, held by springs, of course. But it was a very simple and very effective method of controlling the pressure of the gas, rather than having the thing risk exploding or less or more. But the sitting of the valve was quite crucial. That was done inside when the balloon was inflated without hydrogen. It was inflated by air, and then the valve was set, and that's it. It was set for all time. So he ignored them, more or less ignored the valve, knowing it would work if needed. It was a blow-off safety valve, really. And that was common to all of them.
Did you ever have a balloon explode?
Never. No. I had several break away and float away into... The wind was too strong, the cable was weakened, or it was due to a bad driver who was allowed it to snatch, and many of them floated away into enemy territory. But, in that case, of course, the men were taken prisoners, poor fellows. What happened to them, we don't know.
Were they able to get out in an emergency?
Yes, in emergency they were, yes. They had the parachutes fitted to the one each side of the basket into a canvas bucket affair. An inverted bucket would be a better expression. Green canvas, and the wide part faced downwards, and the narrow part was attached to the basket of the balloon, so that you bent over in theory and grasped the underneath part, which contained the actual parachute. The lid of the bucket, you could say, was attached to the parachute. You simply grabbed the lid of the canvas bucket, and if all went well, you would fall free to earth with the parachute bellying out behind you, you hoped, leaving the canvas bucket behind. And I think the name of the parachute was an American one. I think it was a Guardian Angel, something of that sort. I may be wrong. I have an idea it was a Guardian Angel one. And there was a man, of course, killed with that. It was Basil Hallam, the stage actor, music hall man. He was with us for about 6 weeks for tuition. Went to another squadron. I like to think it was an army squadron. And they forgot to tie the parachute bucket on correctly or hard enough to the basket. And he was attacked by an aeroplane which set fire to his balloon. He jumped, of course, in the bucket, and the whole parachute with him came down from about 1,200 feet, and he was killed. That led to great headlines all over the paper, this famous man in the musical world. But so much for the parachute. And by and large, I think they were as good as can be expected in view of the time and experience people put in. It was very young in the air age, you know, for parachutes. People hadn't got down to it at all, really. And I think the Americans started the idea.
Did the big battles at which you were present, like the Somme, cause a lot of extra work, or were you sort of at the same pitch of work all the time?
Extra work, because extra artillery was brought up. And their thing was then where to aim. You had to tell them where to concentrate, and then apart from that, you might get a shoot interrupted by some flare from the infantry down there calling out for artillery support onto some counterattack which you weren't aware of upstairs. But you might have the shoot interrupted by the SOS from the poor infantry down below. But by and large, I think they were balloons with their high observation platforms, anything up to 1,000 feet, were most efficient and very, very effective. In fact, more so than the aeroplanes, I feel, because they were stationary, and the poor artillery spotter planes were on the move the whole time, which was a job I wouldn't care for at all, because they were very slow-moving planes. Many of them brought down, unfortunately. But I would say the ideal was the kite balloon. The only added risk was the being brought down in flame, which was very, very easy. It could happen sometimes for bullets to pass clean through and nothing happened, only a slow deflation. In fact, it hadn't caught fire at all, by luck. A and all you saw was a rather an elephant swaying around with a rather loose backside, because it would sort of lose its shape, and you could, of course, down at once. Because you could see what was happening more so than the men in the basket with this huge gas bag above them. They couldn't see what was happening at all, but you could down there as the driver, the least sign of anything not happening as it should happen. You had to be alert to come to their rescue and bring them down. That's what you were there for. Most important job. And it has been known, as I was saying, that for bullets to pass straight through, but normally no. They used to, incendiaries, later on they used incendiary, which of course the bullet was alight before it hit, and that was fatal. You see a huge billow of black smoke and then red fire, and that was it. Yeah. And you hoped. Two pure white silk parachutes floating slowly to earth. You hoped to see that, but you often did not. Because they were very improperly packed. Nobody quite knew how to properly pack them. They were just stuffed in, well, that'll do, and held, and that was... That's how I feel. It was rather hit and miss. Of course, the aeroplane pilots had no parachutes at all. They were forbidden. None. I think for one